Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. I am Nicholas Baines, Head of IR for Intercement. With me here today for our earnings call and fireside chat is Paulo Diniz, our Chief Financial Officer, and Marco Zangari, our Head of Corporate Finance and Planning. The presentation will be followed by a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, you may send it via webcast. The presentation will be available online, and the webcast link has been provided to you in your registration email. Before we start, please note that on this call you will hear discussions of non-IFRS financial measures, including EBITDA, adjusted EBITDA, and margins. Reconciliation of these non-IFRS measures to the most directly comparable IFRS financial measures is contained in the accompanying material that supports this call or the annual financial report, which is available at the investor section of our website, as well as on the Singapore Exchange website. During this call, we will make forward-looking statements about events and circumstances that have not yet occurred, including outlook and projections of Intercement's operating activities and their anticipated financial impact on our business and financial results for 2021 and beyond. These statements are based on management's current expectations and actual results, and future events may differ materially due to risk and uncertainties, including those detailed from time to time in filings Intercement makes with the Singapore Exchange Commission. Intercement disclaims any obligation to update information contained in these forward-looking statements, whether because of new information, future events, or otherwise. Please refer to the Intercement 4th Quarter 2021 Financial Report for a basic discussion of the relevant risks and uncertainties. All public information is available on our website. And now, let's start. Moving to our chat. Paulo, it seems that 2021 has been a great year for Intercement. Where do you see the company standing, and how should we see the 4th Quarter 2021?
Good morning, everyone. Nick fully agreed. 2021 was an outstanding year indeed, and by any metric. For example, let me mention our top line volume. If you take the last 6 years, 2021 was the first year that instead of another volume drop, we posted a growth of 6%, resulting in a volume of over 20 million tons. Even if we take the fourth quarter sales of 5.1 million tons, a volume similar to the fourth quarter of 2020, one has to have in mind that 2020 presented a sort of inflated comparison base in Brazil due to Intercement Brazil's outstanding responsiveness during the pandemic pent-up demands. Nevertheless, even an environment with higher inflation and interest rates, despite some volume retraction of 4% in the fourth quarter of 2021, in Brazil, Intercement Brazil continued to post a solid level of sales of over 2.1 million tons in the quarter, helped by the performance of the housing segment, given the strong pace of residential launches in recent quarters. The agro-positive dynamic continued to benefit cement demand, leading Midwest and South regions to post the highest growth rates. On an annual basis, Intercement Brazil booked a sales volume slightly over 9.1 million tons in 2021. And again, being the first year since 2015 that the company exceeded the 9 million tons bar. In Argentina, the demand kept increasing and beat pre-pandemic levels. Macroeconomic conditions remained to drive the retail market as customers continued to go for real estate assets and house remodeling, as the local currency continued to be corroded by inflation. Additionally, the bulk market kept showing positive signs, backed by the continuity of the works started early this year. Therefore, Luma Negra booked a volume of almost 1.7 million tons in the fourth quarter of last year, up 4% in comparison to the same quarter of 2020. In terms of full year of 2021, Luma Negra reached a volume of 6.1 million tons, an increase of 19% versus 2020 figures, and back to the pre-pandemic levels. In terms of our operations, let me bring Zangar here to the game. Zangar, can you please bring some extra color on Africa?
Yeah, sure. Good morning, everyone. Regarding Africa, I'd rather start highlighting that the portfolio effect played its role again, with some geographies offsetting another. In South Africa, after last quarter's turmoil, social unrest, and some production constraints, we were able to react well and register 5% volume expansion versus the fourth quarter of 2020, driving 2021 figures to grow by 11% when compared to the previous year. Additionally, in Egypt, although the competitive landscape in the industry remained challenging, volumes showed positive recovery signs, being up 9% in comparison to the same quarter of 2020. Better dynamics on regional construction activity continued to benefit cement demand, in conjunction with the production quota system in place since July, which enhanced competitive dynamics. As a result, our subsidiary, Amireia, posted a 5% volume growth in 2021, being the first expansion in the last 4 years. On the other hand, in Mozambique, as you know, we are under a new competitive landscape since the entry of a new player in the southern region of the country in the second quarter of last year. Therefore, our local business, Cimentos de Moçambique, posted a 21% drop in volumes during the fourth quarter when compared to the fourth quarter of the previous year. For full 2021 figures, volumes were down 16%. So, Paulo, I guess that's it. A brief overview on the African operations volumes.
Thanks, Zangari. And Nick, I know it was a lot of information on the fourth quarter volume of 5.1 million tons, but let me simplify all that by saying, one, Argentina continued to see a solid dynamic market. Two, Brazil held up a healthy level. Three, Egypt saw a significant turnaround. Four, South Africa is delivering a rising performance. And five, Mozambique, after a market shakeout, has already passed its worst momentum.
Thanks, Paulo and Zangari. It seems that overall a healthy demand remained in most of the geographies. We may change now to pricing dynamics. We have seen a rising pricing trend shown by most of the cement players around the globe, with some geographies posting double-digit increases. How pricing has behaved among our geographies during the fourth quarter 2021, Paulo?
Well, Nick, it's easier to start answering this question by taking a look at what happened to energy costs. For example, international petcoke prices increased 110% in the fourth quarter of last year in comparison to the same quarter of 2020, coming from around $68 per ton to $140 per ton. Therefore, considering that energy is a key element in the cement cost structure, it's easy to see why most cement players around the globe posted rising prices. In Brazil, Intercement Brazil, that represented 40% of our total volume sold in the quarter, continued to show rising prices. In local terms, up 13% compared to the fourth quarter of 2020, or 10% in dollar terms. So, on one hand, we see a beneficial environment in Brazil based on a more rational industry structure. And on the other hand, we continue to see the works of our revamped go-to-market strategy. However, similar to any other cement player, Intercement Brazil had its price adjustments running behind energy costs increase. In Argentina, Loma Negra contributed with around 35% of our consolidated volume. In dollar terms, prices over $90 per ton in the quarter are back to its traditional range, contributing to a solid top-line expansion of almost 90% in dollar terms. Finally, looking at our African operations, which accounted for around 25% of our total volume, we saw a price recovery to almost $73 per ton. In summary, we had a vigorous price recovery in Egypt. After years of declining prices, the market saw some production discipline implemented by the local government. South Africa, prices around 4% in local currency and even strong in dollar terms, given rand appreciation in the period. Pricing dynamics benefit from a bolder commercial approach, including a better product mix. Only in Mozambique, as a consequence of the new competitive landscape, prices were down 5% in local terms, around 10% up in dollar terms, given the metal appreciation in the period. However, it should be noted that the worst seems to be over, as this gap in prices in Mozambique is reducing quarter after quarter. So, to make a long story short, better prices translated into sales of $476 million in the quarter, an expansion of 38% in comparison to the same quarter of 2020.
Yeah, well, Paulo, it seems that the balance among pricing and costs is one of the greatest key factors for the industry at current environment. And how this balance among prices and costs has reflected into EBITDA generation in currency?
Yes, Nick, totally right. This balance was very important in 2021 and will play a key role during this year. A player that pumps up volume, sacrificing prices, will be highly penalized when costs are moving up, such as we saw within energy and freight costs. On the other hand, a player that pumps only prices up shall face some volume impact and consequently a deterioration on its operating leverage level. Therefore, an optimized balance is key in order to reach a proper level of return on capital employed. In the fourth quarter of last year, our total cash cost base, including expenses, totaled $360 million. So a 37% increase in comparison to the fourth quarter of 2020. However, it's slightly under the growth of our sales revenue of 38%. On a per unit basis, total cash costs per ton raised at the same magnitude of 37%, reflecting the material cost increase on key cost elements, namely thermal energy on the back of rising petcoke prices. Therefore, considering what was said, EBITDA generation expanded 5% in the fourth quarter in comparison to the same quarter of 2020 to reach $126 million. Naturally, that, given the magnitude of costs increase, margin declined in the same in the quarter to 26%, cement players continue to run behind inflation and cost increases, as I mentioned. Looking at the full year of 21, EBITDA expanded by 37% to $470 million, while margins were at 28%, slightly better when compared to 2020. Finally, it does not hurt to say, or to refresh, as I never said, I do see our recent quarter's performance, or even the last year, as a recovery period, and not as a growth phase. Let's talk about growth when we reach the level that we operate in 2013 or 2014. Not before that. Anyway, what is key is that our two main operations, Brazil and Argentina, have been pushing this recovery, running at a new and stronger pace when compared to previous years. Somehow, South Africa is moving the same direction. In fact, Brazil has reached an adjusted EBITDA of $170 million in 2021, an increase of 35% versus 2020, with a healthy EBITDA margin of 29%. In Argentina, despite all the macroeconomic uncertainties, Luma Negra was able to post a strong adjusted EBITDA of $240 million for the full year, a growth of 28% in comparison to 2020, with an EBITDA margin of 32%.
That's right, Paulo. And we also saw a significant recovery in South Africa as well, expanding its EBITDA by 51% in 2021 versus 2020, with the margin at a solid 24% level in the year and at 29% in the fourth quarter. In addition, Egypt also showed encouraging signals, posting EBITDA expansion of 11% in 2021 after years of declining results. And in fact, in the fourth quarter, the increase was even stronger at 21%, while margins were still at a compressed level, but improving. Moving up to the below-the-line results, I mean those components below EBITDA, Paulo. Any relevant cash movement you want to comment?
Well, in general, as part of our seasonal path, it is usual that the fourth quarters registered positive fluctuation in operational assets and liabilities, given higher demand and sales in the second half of the year. As a result, fluctuation in operational assets and liabilities, mainly working capital, presented a favorable move of $24 million, reducing the annual unfavorable fluctuation to $86 million in 2021. Important to recall that in 2020, we had a significant amount of payables that were shifted from 2020 to 2021 due to the pandemic, penalizing the working capital last year. In terms of CapEx, it totaled $57 million in the quarter, mostly limited to organic investments as La Mali project was basically concluded, with the kiln commissioned in the second quarter of 2021, while mill and packing line were fully operational in the third quarter of 2021. Meanwhile, CapEx for the full year reached $162 million, lower than 2020, as we had lower payments related to La Mali. Therefore, great part of the investment was concentrated on maintenance CapEx. By the way, for 2022, we do not anticipate any strategic or expansion CapEx. But talking about our below the line, it is important to highlight other relevant items. Perhaps, Zangari, you can comment on some financial flows to enhance our below the line discussion.
Thank you, Paulo. Sure, we'll do it. Firstly, I'd like to start with the new issuance we were able to conclude in December in South Africa with a local bank in local currency for around $30 million. This issuance not only improved our capital structure in our South African operation, given that it had zero debt previously to that, but also met our medium-term goal to place debt at the OPCOs instead of at the HoldCOs. We also concluded a $20 million issuance at HoldCo level to strengthen our cash position for 2022. Moving to interest expenses disbursement, it reached $39 million during the quarter, an increase when compared to $25 million in the fourth quarter 2020, mostly as a consequence of higher interest rates in Brazil. On the other hand, in 2021, it totaled $111 million, lower than those $143 million disbursed in 2020, driven by a combination of gross debt reduction, interest payment schedule change, and lower upfront fees. Lastly, in the fourth quarter of last year, we had a minor payment of quarterly dividend to the preferred shareholder on our hydroelectric power generation business in Brazil. As a result, we ended the quarter with a cash position of $247 million and net debt at $1.3 billion US dollars, being down 5% compared to December 2020. Then Intercement's financial leverage was reduced to 2.8 times adjusted EBITDA, which is the lowest level of leverage since 2013. So as you can see, the deleverage trend remained in place.
Yes, Zanga, the leverage trend continued on track. Very good. And Paulo, we know that Intercement does not provide any quantitative guidance, but maybe you could share very briefly and in a qualitative aspect your view for the year of 2022.
Well, there's no doubt that the current global economic environment, including some key geopolitical challenges, place many uncertainties in front of us. I guess that we all agree on that. As part of this context, we see increased volatility on commodity prices, higher costs, inflation, and interest rates in many countries, not to mention this new COVID wave that seems to start on the other side of the globe. Part of this game is how international fuel costs will behave going forward. In particular, petcoke costs in case of our industry. In fact, after peaking last October, if I'm not mistaken, petcoke price was going down and reached a lower level in February before the outbreak of Russia and Ukraine crisis. Although we expect petcoke price to normalize in the second half of the year, the fact is that as companies have their price increases running behind inflation, we do expect a certain margin compression. On the other hand, we expect a slightly volume increase, even in Brazil, with the upcoming presidential elections. Therefore, we see 2021 as a year to depend and build on our 2021 results. In other words, even if one considers an EBITDA similar to what we saw last year, it's easy to see a better performance in terms of working capital, in terms of capex, and in terms of taxes. And on the other hand, not so good performance on the financial side due to interest rates increase. However, it's reasonable to expect a free cash flow of the same magnitude to the one verified last year. So in a nutshell, this is how I see this year, 2021. Shaping up at this moment. Hopefully it helps.
Yes, Paulo, it helps a lot. Thank you very much for this broad view for the year. And well, Paulo and Zangari, now I think after going through the solid highlights of the fourth quarter and 2021, I believe we can now open the floor for some questions from our investors, analysts, and bankers. I'd like to remember all that are connected that if you'd like to ask a question, you may send it via webcast. Yeah, just to start, as we have been doing the last conference calls, we'll start the first question with how the cash position ended the year, the breakdown among the geographies. So the cash is allocated on roughly figures $80 million in Brazil at December, $50 million in Argentina, $45 in African geographies, and 65 at the HoldCo level. And now we'll move for the next question. We'll merge two questions here. Questions, the first and the second. The first one is from Hu Benjamin. He asks about, can you please provide some guidance on CapEx dividends and working capital change for the coming years? Merging this question with Kyle Owusu question that argues that how should we think about run rate CapEx now that La Mali is completed? So I will start with CapEx and then I pass the microphone for Paulo. So CapEx, a good metric worldwide for maintenance CapEx is around $4.5 per volume sold. So for the coming years, we expect only maintenance CapEx in our geography. So this is a good, will be a good metric per ton. Yeah.
Well, I guess that when we talk about working capital, well, just to complete on this CapEx, we do not expect, as I mentioned, any investments with regards to strategic, you know, moves or new construction. Therefore, as Nick said, basically that metric that we use is very sounding, and perhaps some compliance CapEx, but we are talking about amounts lower than what we saw in recent years. In terms of working capital, again, the idea is to continue to improve our position unless there is any kind of surprise like we saw during the pandemic, where we are obliged to stretch a little bit and therefore move some items to the following year. But we should have no surprises in here. And in terms of dividends, I guess that we are in a situation where basically all the operating companies are profitable. And you saw that last year we paid almost $80 million in terms of taxes. Therefore, this is the reason why we are basically, doing a kind of debt push down, if you like, into the OPCOs to make sure that we can, generate more financial expenses at the operating companies level and consequently reduce the tax burden that is being paid. On the top of what Zangari mentioned in South Africa, that was raised $31 million, and money was used through capital reduction to send to the InterCement holding level. We are also considering, as we speak, another loan at Mozambique, something around $20 million, a bit more, a bit less. That should also be used in order to pay down some intercompany payables and move money up into the to the holding company. Of course, that we continue to count on dividends coming from Brazil, and also we are analyzing, what is possible to do in terms of Argentina. Because as we know, we have finished the La Mali project in that country, and therefore this year we start to pile up cash in Argentina. So we have to see what's going to be the best use for that cash.
Great, Paulo. I will move to the next question, partly already answered, regarding what was the purpose of the $30 million loan in South Africa. So what was used for the proceeds? And I call Zangari here to answer what was the address for this 30 million.
Just like Paulo was mentioning, we used it to replace that at the holdco level. We moved that cash up to capital reduction and used that cash for those corporate needs.
We have plenty of questions here, so just to rush a bit during our time constraint here, we will merge three questions regarding the expectation to refinance the 2024 notes. from Nicolas Fabiancic, Sean Mulroy, and Lorena Reich. So, Paulo, could you please give a call on 2004 bonds refinance, please?
Yes, I guess it's important before anything to understand that two very important pillars of our financial strategy, they are, sustained, and they will continue to be there. One is the 2024 bonds refinancing, and the other one is the IPO of the Brazilian subsidiary Intercement Brazil. Yes, true that we are living in a year with a lot of challenges. Therefore, what we can do on our side here is making sure that at the end of each one of those quarters, the company is prepared to access the debt capital markets or the equity capital markets in case there is any window of opportunity. We know that any window this year will be extremely short. Therefore, we have to be prepared in order to profit from it. Perhaps we may have more windows in terms of debt capital markets than the equity capital markets. Nevertheless, as I mentioned before, we are also counting on some actions in order to strengthen our liquidity. And as already mentioned, similar to what we did at South Africa, we are also arranging a loan at our operations in Mozambique in order to pay some intercompany payables. We are also considering to bring in-house a new bank with a bigger ticket in order to refinance some small loans that we are rolling at the holding level. Additionally, we are also planning to have additional dividends from operating companies that were not used to pay dividends so far. Besides, of course, keeping the monetization of some non-core assets, including some small real state assets.
Yeah, great, Paul. I think with this answer, we also can cut some on other questions from the list here regarding the bond refinance and also the IPO plans. And we can move for Elise. The question from Lahain Vial. Eliseo asked about the difference regarding the EBITDA reported by Loma Negra and the EBITDA we report for Argentina here at Investment Participações. Please, Paulo, go ahead.
Well, thank you for this question. Yeah, as not everyone is familiar with this subject. Anyway, this difference on adjusted EBITDA for Loma Negra comes mainly from the conversion mechanism. In fact, this difference has to do with the way Loma Negra presents its summarized figures in US dollars. Note that Loma is obliged to present its financials in pesos, ARS, for statutory reasons. Therefore, the company takes its financials in pesos for any given period and convert them into US dollars using the historical pesos amount converted by the average exchange rate. Basically, the company is using this same methodology for years now. However, when we consolidate the Loma Negra financials, we have to follow IFRS conversion rules for an inflationary environment, that is IAS 21. Therefore, we take their financials pesos, which is Loma's functional currency, and adjust the financials by inflation with the proper monetary adjustment as required by IAS 29 and IAS 21, paragraph 42, if I'm not mistaken, to convert it to US dollars as the reporting currency and use the end of period exchange rate. In other words, as Intercement has the US dollars as our reporting currency, we have to follow the proper accounting rules from International Account Standards, IAS. Needless to say that as inflation grows and or FX parity with inflation is decoupled, this discrepancy tends to increase. However, it's important to note that the free cash flow result and ending cash is the same for both methodologies. So, really sorry for any confusion or perception distortion that this may cause.
Yeah, great, Paulo. It was very clear. And this is an important issue given that we have been raised by several investors. We move for the next question from Richard Lee at CPL. Richard Lee asks about the $10 million accounting adjustment in Brazil during this quarter. I will start with the answer and then maybe Paulo can add some color. But this was basically some equipment that were losing their value at Brazil. That was a small, not relevant write-off at Brazil standard standpoint of view. It was nearly zero reais at Intercement Brazil, but this was not adjusted in the past at Intercement Participações, so it still had a value of $10 million at the books of at the holding. So this was a one-off adjustment and should impact only this quarter.
Yeah, I guess it's important to have in mind that usually our group, I mean, basically before anything, I mean, we grow through some acquisitions and always on acquisitions, you have PPAs, you know, as accounted. And that generates some goodwill. Sometimes that generates some goodwill at the holding level. And when we have assets in the operating companies that are, you know, written off or value has been depleted. Therefore, we are obliged also to adjust the goodwill at the holding level. And this is, as a consequence, this basically implies the kind of extra book entry at the holding level in order to comply to that.
Great addition, Paulo. I will move for next question from Maximilian from Anaxis. Maximilian raised the question about the why tax payments have increased in 2021. I will start and then move to Paulo again, but this was basically due to larger amount of net income in our operations and reducing debt in Argentina. So this reduced the optimization of capital structure in these geographies. Right, Paulo?
Yeah, I guess that you mentioned Argentina. And on the top of that, in Argentina, the initial government plan to reduce income tax from 30% to 26%, if I'm not mistaken, it really, at the end of the day, went the other way around. They end up increasing the income tax rate to 35%. But again, on the top of what we mentioned before, that all operating companies are generating better results, and that implies basically higher tax as the debt level at the operating companies is very, very soft.
And in addition to that, South Africa also have had a net income, larger net income, and there was no debt. So looking for 2022, we now have local debt in South Africa. We have increased our debt in Brazil up close. So the capital structure for this year should be more efficient than it was in 2021. Another question is regarding the cement volumes in January 2022 in Brazil. There were some investors saying that heard that was highly affected by the rain in Brazil and Argentina, and how it's standing for the coming months and coming quarters.
Again, thanks for the question, and very true. I mean, the amount of rain in January, in the first days of February, was really the highest we saw in recent years. However, the second half of February and also March, we can see that volumes are already higher than what we saw last year. So basically, yes, recovering, and we do hope to finalize the first quarter in a better position than last year.
An additional question from Anne Mule from Bank of America. And raised the subject that there are some plants closing in Europe due to high energy prices. And if we could talk briefly how we are managing energy prices in our different geographies. Please, Paulo, go ahead.
Yeah. I guess that let's start with Argentina. I guess that Argentina has perhaps the financial power to take positions in terms of gas supply and even fuel. And sometimes, I mean, they really, in order to avoid the high cost during the winter time, they pump up production because they do have extra available production capacity, and also buy more fuel. I guess that in terms of electrical energy, electricity, they have also entered into long-term agreements with some companies at a very, locked prices, and we're talking basically green energy here. So you would say that Luma Negra has a position, that is theoretically better than its competitive players, and therefore, again, the company continues to do better in that kind of environment, even if you have higher energy costs. Moving to Brazil, I mean, somehow we can see a similar situation in the sense that, yes, energy prices are affecting all the players in here. However, when we talk about, for example, thermal energy, I guess that Intersemente Brazil is one of the only two players that buy petcoke directly from Vibra, former Petrobras, and therefore that extra pit stop that other players have to do in order to buy from distributors, I guess this is not the case of Intersemente Brazil. And in terms of electrical energy, 70% of the needs of Intersemente Brazil, the company buys from its own hydroelectric plants, therefore also in a kind of a competitive position vis-a-vis other players. I guess that I'm not saying that Intersemente Brazil does not feel the heat, yes, it feels, but other players, they do feel it much faster than Intersemente Brazil. In terms of Africa, I guess that not only in Mozambique, but also in Egypt, we have the, I would say, the benefit of play with the own production of clinker or imports, depend on the economics. For example, currently in Mozambique, we are having clinker being sourced by a third party, and therefore not producing, by ourselves due to a better economics. And the same thing holds true in Egypt. Sometimes it's easier to buy clinker, sometimes even fuel, instead of producing locally or buying locally. Yeah, that's the rationale for the different geographies.
Yeah, great, Paul. Just let's see what will be the next question. The next question comes from Eliseo Sanchi at La Renvial regarding the difference between EBITDA and adjusted EBITDA in Brazil. There was around $80 million difference, which the EBITDA was higher than adjusted EBITDA. Please, Paulo, give us all on that.
Yes, well, basically in Brazil, like many other companies, we had success with regards to the PIS/COFINS on ICMS tax. And therefore, that kind of extra credit that we got as a benefit, because it was a one-time event, we just, segregated it from our just the EBITDA, because this is not something that we will continue to have. Okay. And again, when we talk about adjusted EBITDA, we really try to go and consider only, you know, inputs and that really are on a kind of a recurring basis in our open cycle.
But very clear, Paulo. The next question comes from Guilherme Costa at AZ Quest. Guilherme asks about the cash position at Argentina and the company ability to cash out given the macroeconomic restrictions at Argentina.
Yeah, I mean, basically the country continues to have a FX environment that is extremely controlled. Companies with difficulties to move money out of Argentina. At the same time, I guess that you saw some companies like Telecom Argentina that paid out dividends through international bonds. Other banks, they did the same. Fact is that, you know, as results continue to be healthy and cash continues to pump up, I guess that Luma Negra should also start to study some, you know, transactions or let's say at least the best way to use those funds that are being generated there. Again, company is in a kind of net debt position that is basically zero and generating EBITDA that is over $210 million a year. So that is some, you know, power in order to really use that in the best way. So as I mentioned before, this is a kind of a subject that we are going to be devoting a lot of attention this year on how to optimize the use for such funds that are being generated there.
We got a lot of questions on Brazilian subsidiary IPO timeline. So we'll move for, despite Paulo already mentioned briefly the context of the IPO, we'll be providing more details regarding Sam Bevan question from Aberdeen, the use of proceeds and timeline for the IPO. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me step back a little bit and talk about the situation that we saw, you know, when we basically aborted our IPO of InterCement Brazil. At that point in time, we had an environment where the international investors, they were very, very, I would say, uncertain, to say the least, about the local environment in Brazil, and therefore they rather prefer, I mean, not to jump as we thought they would jump into the transaction. At the same time, the local investors, they had no knowledge at all about the cement industry, as we really don't have any listed company here in Brazil. So it was something new that they had to learn. However, I mean, I'm not even going to comment on the IPO environment at that point in time. But basically, considering that, we had a kind of a work order, slightly over 2.2 billion reais, although you are expecting something like 4.5 billion reais at that point in time. We could complete the book if we would be willing to give 10% discount at that moment, because you know, looking at the shadow book with those discounts, we could come to that. Anyway, that was not what we decided. We do know the proper value of the operation. However, we had some investors basically saying that, you know, we should consider to do a kind of smaller IPO and not to, you know, list 49% of the company, because, you know, that would, was giving the idea that the shareholders was seeing the company at its value in weak, and therefore that was a bad sign. Well, as you saw, I guess, that we are, you know, we heard the investors. We made that 1 billion reais that pushed down from the parent company into Intercement Brazil. By doing that, with the same firm value, we generate a reduction in the equity value of Intercement Brazil. And now we are also prepared to do a kind of IPO in two steps, to do an IPO at around 30% of the company, and a follow-on after 18 months or so for the remaining percentage up to 49%. Therefore, as I mentioned before, we are keeping the company prepared. And of course, with this new structure, I guess that we could also use the rule 476 of CVM, of only for qualified investors. And in this way, we could complete the IPO time frame, you know, less than a week. This is why we keep the company prepared, and in case we see such a window, we go for it. However, at the same time, we must see that you know, the fixed income market is much more attractive than the you know, variable income market. Therefore, we also had some investors approaching us, saying that, you know, why the company does not consider convertible debentures, because this way for the coming, you know, year or so, you know, investors, they could profit from the fixed income market and down the road convert such debentures into equity of Intercement and Brazil. So this is in a very embryonic stage discussion, but it's something that it's an idea that has its merits and that we are taking a close look. Anyway, the idea of the IPO remains the same, you know, a secondary component, even if we have a primary component, very small, but ideally would be a secondary component only in order to settle that at the holding level.
Okay, so the last question regarding 2024 bond buybacks, if the company considers at the current level that is currently trading, and what will be the minimum cash requirement for the company to operate?
Well, as we all know, out of the initial issue of $750 million, the company has already, you know, bought back something like $200 million. So outstanding is $550. At this point in time, especially considering the uncertainties that we do see in the global arena, we are not planning to continue to buy those bonds, although depend on how things are, we could also do that. But, you know, minimum amounts. I guess with regards to cash requirements, I guess the company changed a lot its view on how to manage its operating company. And really the famous, you know, think global and act local, we are applying that principle so that by doing that, each one of the operating companies is being responsible for their business. And by doing that, we reduce the amount of cash that you know, we consider to be the minimum one to operate. I mean, just to give an idea, in the past, the company operated with $200, $150 million cash. Today, we feel very, very, very comfortable in operating with $70, $75 million of cash. So we have reduced dramatically that level and continue to reduce as we feel confidence that the operating companies are managing their business properly.
Great, Paulo. Well, we had plenty of questions. We had, I believe, that more than 30 questions in today's call. Unfortunately, we do not have time. So the remaining question, please feel free to send email via IR. And with that, we had a very insightful morning, Paulo and Zangari. And thank you again.
Yes, Nick, absolutely. Thank you for hosting this, and it will be great to come back in the next quarter. Thank you all.
Nick, Zangari, also enjoy our little chat here. So now let's put back our focus on improving even more our operating performance and cash efficiency, and of course, build up a stronger 2022. Let me thank you all for being with us, and have a great day.
Bye. Bye, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is now over. Thank you all for joining today and have a pleasant day. Goodbye.